I'm not pulling into my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work at Home edition. So today I have Dave Humphreys with me, who is the lead set designer of Outlaws of Thunder Junction. So, hey, Dave.
Howdy.
Okay, so I already did a podcast where I talked through the vision design, which you should go listen to if you haven't yet. This is going to assume you've already heard that. Okay, so what we're doing today is we're going to talk about where we handed things off from vision to set, and then talk about the challenges of making that in set design, okay?
Yep.
Okay, so let's start with committing crimes. So let me tell the audience where we started, what we handed off. So what we handed off to you was whenever you target, deal damage, or destroy one of your opponent or one of their things, that's committing a crime. And obviously the printed version just does targeting. It doesn't do damage or destruction. We want to talk a little bit. I talked a little bit about why we didn't do destruction in my vision podcast, but what were the challenges of trying to make a broader version of crimes?
Yeah, I think a lot of it came down to rules stuff. I'm fuzzy on some of the details, but for example, like caring about destroying stuff, I think there's some murkiness on whether like you destroy things or like kind of the rules of magic clean up and destroy things. And it was murky in enough cases that we were looking for something simpler. Again, like I'm sympathetic to like, oh, why aren't sweepers like crimes? They really feel like crimes. But yeah, we kept finding exceptions to the rules and things that were kind of murky, and targeting was like the thing that I felt like we could really felt like a crime, and it was something we could pretty clearly and cleanly distinguish, right? You find your cards with the word target. I guess one notable exception is like auras don't have the word target, but like if you put pacifism on your opponent's creature, there's a hidden targeting going on. But for the most part, like if your card says target and you do it on your opponent's stuff, no matter where it is, like asterisk, if you target something in exile, that's not a crime, but that's really like almost no cards even do that. So yeah, in general, you have a card with target. It targets your opponent's stuff. You've committed a crime.
One thing I didn't bring up, but I did some research before today. I was just looking back at the handoff document. So that was one of the problems with the destroy. Here's the core problem with damage. Is let's say I have a lightning bolt and I bolt my opponent's creature. How many crimes have I committed?
Right, yeah, there's also, yeah, like, because, yeah, you're targeting it and you're damaging it. So, like, there are actually multiple instances of a crime going on. And, yeah, that rings a bell and was also a thing. I just felt like, right, a lot of this is about, a lot of times when we make a new mechanic, it's just kind of exciting to, like, you know, you can go into your search engine and, like, search for word cards with the word target. Like, even, right, frankly, we'll get to it, but like the bonus sheet for this was like kind of part of my fun. I built pretty much the whole bonus sheet, I think. And yeah, it was just fun to look through, like, yeah, what cards target, what cards don't. And it's just a new way to like reevaluate cards based on some new characteristic.
Well, I mean, since we're there, let's just jump into that real quick. So the bonus sheet, we have one per pack. All the cards are crimes. Like, I know we always look for a theme for bonus sheets. And you seem very into the idea of, well, what if they're all crimes? That seemed very cool.
Yeah, people were quickly latching on to crimes. Crimes really captures the vibe of, like, a lot of what we're going for here, right? Like, we want villains to be cool. We want to be pointed up. We want to encourage you to kind of get into the spirit. And, like, committing a crime is just a catchy phrase that people latched on to. And it felt like, right, bonus sheets a lot of times were like, oh, it's all legends or it's all enchantments or it's all lands or what. Well, like, it was really fun to do this as like, I think, a first one where it was like tied into something like that wasn't just like a card type or something, right? That it was right, we're going to take this as a very flavorful element of the set and look for cards that do that, and taking it to another level. I will, like, one thing that probably isn't obvious in anything that I've like talked about with other people is just like, internally, a lot of people know this, but like it was really important to choose words that sounded like they could be villainous or whatnot. Like, it's not first of all, I wanted like almost everything on the crime sheet to like be that the main use of the card was to target your opponent's stuff, right? Like, I didn't want to have like giant growth on the crime sheet. Giant growth can be a crime, but that's not the main use of the card. So I wanted the cards to mostly the main purpose of the card is usually targeting your opponent or other stuff. So that was a criteria, but I also wanted words that were evocative of villains and whatnot. Like, I know, like, Aaron Forsyth also pushed on this a lot, where, like, right, like, we included murder on the bonus sheet just because, like, you know, what are some words you'd expect here the most? Like, murder is, like, kind of the, like, perfect, like, yeah, like a perfect example of, like, what you'd expect to be on that end. So I shied away from cards that were, like, targeted your opponent's stuff but didn't have, like, kind of a villainous name. So that was a major filter by which I was doing things.
Yeah, and it's nice. I mean, one of the challenges of bonus sheets has always been finding a clean theme without, and we were doing all the low-hanging fruit. It's kind of nice to try something a little bit different. This plays into the theme of the set and a mechanic of the set, so I liked how that worked.
And then there were fun ones like, yeah, Crime and Punishment was, like, the other really fun one. Like, I know, like, Aaron Forsyth, again, fought a lot for that one in terms of, like, that was a pretty big ask for,
yeah,
right, like, in terms of the frame needs and the, like, mm-hmm, yeah, doing special frames for, like, kind of just one card like that. But he went to bed there. And then there are some other goofy ones. Like, my like, one of my pet ones is what? Outlaw's Merriment, I think, if I have the name right. Or yeah. It just seems so goofy. Like, it technically rarely commits a crime. But, like, you can get a rogue, which is conveniently an outlaw. And then that can ping them, and that's a crime. And But the name of Outlaw's Merriment was too charming to pass up on, yeah.
So, let's talk a little bit about the challenges of... We have crimes. Okay, once we decide it's just targeting... what are the challenges of putting this at? What do you have to build around to make that work?
Yeah, there's a lot potentially to unpack here. I mean, there's some stuff like just analyzing, like, we have some cards historically in Magic that are potentially problematic, just cards with, like, we've almost all of them have actually been errated to be worded this way in Oracle, but, like, 0:, target something, whatever. There are a few cards in Magic's past that do that. We knew that could be an obstacle. It's hard to guess exactly how much those would have mattered in, like, eternal formats, which is mostly where they existed. At some point, like, I kept gravitating more and more towards, like, mostly we want you to commit a crime once a turn. We didn't really want to incentivize you to, like, all right, I'm going to try to do 3 crimes in a turn and then have to balance all the cards with weaker outputs because, like, you could do that. So we mostly settled on we're going to, like, only reward you once a turn. I mean, that could be on my turn and, you know, player B's turn and player C's turn and multiplayer or whatever. So, like, you can get them multiple times per cycle, but only kind of, like, rewards for once a turn for doing stuff, and then we could give you bigger rewards for doing the crimes rather than worrying about multiple crimes. So that was one thing. The other thing is just in terms of, right, like, so, I mean, crime, one thing I love about crimes is they're asking for interactive gameplay. A lot of gameplay can be interactive. A lot of formats are interactive. A lot of formats, though, like, we'll certainly hear from players that, like, it's two ships passing in the night or whatever, that, like, people are just doing their own thing and ignoring their opponent, and that's often seen as a negative thing, right? Whereas, right, in many ways, by its nature, targeting your opponent and their stuff means you're playing more interactive games. I've also seen plenty of jokes about Commander, where, like, and again, you know, encouraging more stuff that people maybe, like, the game would be more fun if they do that more. So, like, encouraging interaction sounds great. Like, that's a great starting point, I think, for being excited about the mechanic as a designer. Right. Then beyond that, there is some trickiness in, like, limited. I was a little bit worried because in limited, a lot of the non-creature, let's say a lot of the non-creature cards you play, like, are removal cards, and those already, like, target. And, like, I don't need to reward you for playing your creature kill, right? Like, that is not, if anything, I'd probably rather reward people for playing combat tricks and auras and weird build arounds and that might not have the word target. So my biggest concern was probably in limited, where we'd maybe be rewarding you too much for things that already are over rewarded for doing. And having that in mind as I work through the set, like, every playtest feedback I asked, like, you know, were you playing cards that, like, didn't, like, target your opponent's stuff, and, like, did that feel good, and are those strong enough, and were those fun?
Yeah, the other thing I know is being a little more conscious about, like, things on creatures, activated abilities, triggered abilities when you attack and stuff, so that...
Yeah, we... Yeah. So yeah, we have a lot of creatures that like, yeah, how easy was it for you to do like repetitive crimes? We allowed for some fair amount of that. Like there's like a common 1R, 1/3 that it's one tap to do, you know, ping your opponent, which is creating a crime. Which I think it does highlight it kind of where we ended up, where like, I think that card at some point maybe let you just tap into it without a mana requirement. I think it's important that you don't just like completely get to do it for free every turn, that there's some decision and cost involved, but we were pretty liberal with letting you have some ways to do it relatively easily. And this includes even like one of the fun parts I think about this set is that the deserts also do it. Like the deserts are the dual land, not all the deserts, but the dual land deserts, like all
ping you, yeah.
ping and commit a crime, which is goofy, but something people really responded to well.
The other thing I know was an issue is, and this is true for a lot of mechanics, but it's very true for crime, the color pie, it doesn't break very evenly.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, the green does not commit many crimes on cards you're used to playing. It was even hard on the bonus sheet because there are not a lot of examples, especially with like current color pie. Like there's some bends and stuff, but green's mostly, yeah, more about making your own stuff cooler and better. And yeah, like again, giant gross and rampant gross and lands. And yeah, like it's, green doesn't commit a lot of crimes, so that, I mean, that also ends up how we like divided up the color pairs and what they're all about, right? Like they're like we have plenty of green cards that want you to commit crimes and reward you for that, but like, right, the main crime color pair is in blue black. Probably the secondary one would be like red black. Like red blue also works, but yeah, like green and white. I mean, white at least has like pacifisms and like kind of exiling creatures and artifacts, enchantments. But yeah, green, a lot of their stuff is like, unless it's a naturalize, it's hard to find some of the examples. Their fight cards were another pretty easy one.
Yeah, and black is the opposite. Black is dripping with crime. It's not hard to do crimes in black.
Right. Even there, like, yeah, mind rots. And yeah, there's lots of secondary stuff.
Okay, so let's move on to another mechanic. This is a mechanic that you and I have both publicly said might be our favorite mechanic in the set, plot. So just to remind the audience, plot are the spells. You can pay the plot cost, you exile it, and then you get to play it for free, but at sorcery speed on a future turn. So plot, I know, was, I mean, what we handed over basically was that, but there was a lot of the nuance of making it work is very challenging.
Yeah, it's like one of the tricky things about plot is kind of getting people to understand why they're excited about it, which like again I can do now hopefully, but yeah, like it's pretty subtle. It's very again Johnny Jenny or even Spiky in some ways. It's not so much Timmy Tammy. But yeah, it's just really cool. It was really cool to design cards for. It's just like it lets you spend your mana efficiently in many ways, right? Like I can run through examples, right? Like you have an aura for a creature, but you haven't drawn a creature. Or your opponent's killed all your creatures. You can spend mana on your aura, and then you've just been more mana efficient and can play it later. You can, right? There are cards like we each draw some cards. Like people shy away from those cards sometimes because your opponent gets to use them first. But if like we let you cast it for free, then you can use the cards first. There are just a ton of subtle things like that. And then just more like kind of, it's just an easy, straightforward tool. Like, right. If you cast this creature, you know, if it was plotted, put two counters on it. When you plot this creature, do 2 damage to something. Like, so like, just it had so many possibilities and it was like a lot of fun to work with. And I haven't even talked about like the main excitement thing, I think, which is just like, right, that we're letting you set up big turns, right? Like, you know, this is not like full blown storm or whatever. It certainly can feed into some storm like stuff, but it's like, right, you can, it's not like combo in the sense of like I assemble pieces and get an infinite combo, but you can combo pieces, cards together more easily. Like you can, right, even with the ore example, you can like play it and quickly get an ore on it before your opponent untaps or whatever. Or, you know, they're just, you can string together effects more easily. Like if you have a card that rewards you for doing stuff, I guess Terror of the Peaks is another notable reprint in the set, right? It's like, right? You could play Terror of the Peaks and have a whole bunch of cards plotted and then play all those cards and like get huge bonuses off of it, where like otherwise that would be hard because you might play the Terror of Peaks and your opponent just kills it. So it's really easy to string together sequences of things. And then
Let me tell the audience what Terror of the Peaks is, because not everyone knows. Terror of the Peaks, 3 red, 5/4 dragon as a creature. Flying, spells your opponent casts that target Terror of the Peaks cost an additional 3 life to cast. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Terror of the Peaks deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target.
Right, so yeah, you get like a lot of our plot cards are on creatures, so you can have like, even in Limited, I have done this where I like plotted 3 creatures and my opponent's wondering why I haven't played all these cards. And right, like, so, right, again, that's the thing that's hard to latch onto. It's like, well, why don't, like, especially if you like a really aggro deck or something, it's like, well, don't I just want the creatures on the battlefield where I can attack and block? And like, yeah, and in some cases that's true. And we have, like I said, design cards where like, right, oh, you get a, you know, they get bigger if you plotted them and things like that to appeal more to that sort of audience. But yeah, just like you can sequence things together. You can spend your mana efficiently. It lets us make some, you know, another really simple effect is like our red rummaging card, like discard a card to draw 2 cards. Well, like a lot of times you don't have a card you want to pitch, so you can just set it up. I'm going to spend 2 mana. And then like when I actually have like, oh, now I'm mana flooded, or now I have like a dead whatever card, I can, you know, I draw my 1-drop late. It's just there and ready to use. So yeah, I just think it's been a ton of fun. I feel like I'm still like not even covering all the kind of the cool fun cases. I guess the other thing is just cards are free, right? I've sort of implied that in what I'm talking about, but just having your cards be free later on is like super powerful, and leads to some of the flexibility I'm talking about. And then I guess, yeah, the one thing I think we mainly changed is that we said like, I think plot exists only on cards that you'd normally play at, like sorcery speed creatures and sorceries. Could be wrong on that, but we latched onto it more on like, let's explore other ways we can still keep using plot, like cards like Flibble Thip that let you plot other cards. It's like a combination of Future Sight and plotting those cards. And as we made more cards that let you plot cards that didn't naturally have plot, we wanted to make sure that people weren't like plotting counter spells and holding up free counter spells all game or something like that. So that's, you know, that it's pretty subtle, right? Like if you have the understanding that all the cards were originally at sorcery speed, saying you have to do them all at sorcery speed maybe doesn't seem like a feel bad. It was just more like that was kind of a safety measure for us that like free frustrating cards didn't linger around. And which reminds me that like plot, the other thing with plot is we had to be a little bit sparing on removal, right? You don't want to like have a face up Wrath of God or a face up Terror sitting around all game. So we needed to design in ways that it wouldn't be frustrating to just stare at like a removal card or something where it's like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah. The other thing that it let you guys do is because plot exists, it allowed you to build some themes into the set. Like, there are definitely themes built into archetypes that plot enables. Like, for example, you have some second card stuff, right?
Yeah. So blue-red's color pair theme is about casting 2 spells in a turn, which, yeah, this definitely helps set up, right? Yeah, you plot on 1 turn, and then the next turn you cast 2 spells, and it's, again, a quick little combo. Like, yeah, if you've, right, there's, like, a blue common that when it enters, if you've cast 2 spells this turn, you draw a card. So, yeah, like, and it has plot, so, yeah. That is a theme that like we don't do a ton, but like I've done it in the past with some sort of vaguely similar mechanics where this is really makes it to be one of the easiest ones where like it's pretty easy to cast 2 spells if one of them's free. And related, I should touch on then white blue is also in the space where white blue color pair is getting rewards if you haven't cast a spell from your hand on your turn. So yeah, if you plot the card, you haven't cast a spell from your hand. If you have plotted the card, when you cast it later, you haven't cast a spell from your hand. And then it lets us all we also then tied into like doing a little bit more flash creatures and instants, and it's potentially a little bit of a risky mechanic, but trying to like do stuff off turn more. But yeah, between plot and flash and instance, you can kind of like, yeah, you can still easily accomplish like, I didn't cast a spell on my turn.
Okay, let's move on to our next mechanic. A few more mechanics to discuss. So the next villain mechanic is called Spree. I think we called it Mission in Vision Design. So the idea of this set is it's a modal mechanic, but you get to pay for each mode, or you have to pay for each mode, which lets us do modes of different power level, which is a, let's talk a little bit about why from a set design that's so important or flexible.
Yeah, it does make the mechanic a lot different. I certainly a lot of people I think will look at it and it's like, how is this really different than like split cards, or how is this different from Entwine? Right. So you touched on the one like in Entwine, like, right, you're in a spot where like both of the effects kind of need to be at the same power level. Whereas on this, yeah, we can have like wildly different power levels because we can give each of them a specific cost, which again is more like split cards, except, right, we have a lot of cards now that have three modes. And yeah, it's just a fun mixing and matching. And the fact that but we're putting a shared cost in, right? There's a shared cost in the upper right corner. And that gives us a lot more flexibility than on rates. Like, you know, coming up with this example on the spot's maybe a little bit hard, but right, like if you have like three lightning bolts, like the cost of that's not necessarily just like RRR, right? Like that's not do nine. Like it just having that cost separated out lets us more kind of refine and give you like a reasonable cost for all parts of the card. And the sum of the cards, we just, yeah, play design and the designers themselves have just more flexibility on making any of the possibilities a more appealing cost.
And one of the things that I know is nice is play design is always very conscious of what we call knobs, right? Which is how many things do they have to adjust? And it's possible Spree has more knobs than any other thing we've ever made in the history. It's just super, yeah, super knobby.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean, again, you know, with a caveat that we're also of mind that we're getting wordy on cards and some of our cards are complex and it's probably easy to poke fun at us on these cards. These cards, again, were a lot of fun to design, like, right, combining effects, right, like the first and third mode together, the second and third mode, the first and second mode together. Like, these were pretty much a treat to design. I love designing these cards, like, just, right, mixing and matching things in Magic's very fun. Even to the extent, right, like I worked on the, you know, introduction of Sagas. There's some similarities there of just like combining things on cards, right? These are combined in much different ways, but I felt a lot of the similar fun in designing these cards. And yeah, I'm excited to, you know, it's the kicker of kickers, as I said in one of their, yeah, it's like, we know you like kicker. We're not hiding this one.
We have more kicker for you. Okay, let's continue on. The one last sort of villain thing is we batched some creature types in Outlaw. So we handed over to you, I think they had four of the five. So we handed over Assassin and Rogue and Mercenary and Warlock is what we handed over. So we want to talk a little bit about adding Pirate and then just what Outlaws did for the set.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, Pirate, in some ways this almost speaks to persistence of certain individuals in the building, but like I feel like, yeah, somebody kept like, come on, you gotta have pirates are like the quintessential like outlaw or whatever, like how can pirates not be here? And I brushed it off a couple times and it's like, well, you know, I mean, like you have a point, especially like, and we're coming off of Lost Caverns of Ixalan, there are gonna be a lot of pirates there. Like I talked with like the world building lead at the time, I think Grace Fong. And like, it's like, we're not really planning to do a lot of pirates here, but we can do a couple of them. And yeah, it just felt like a really good fit. I mean, more generally speaking, I wanted to make sure that we were covering colors and covering, right? Like I liked Warlocks. I mean, like I didn't add Warlocks, but I liked Warlocks because it's sort of like, oh, it's giving you kind of the spellcaster space and, right, just that we're getting coverage of kind of like classes of characters and colors of characters, and pirates did help round that out some. But yeah, I think a lot of it was just, I didn't get many other, like nobody else was like, come on, you gotta like include this other group. So yeah. It seemed like people were pretty happy with that list of five.
Yeah, in the handoff document, which it'll go up eventually online, I list all the backups, like when we hand it over, go, here's the ones we considered, and Pirates was in that list of like, here are other ones you could consider.
Right, like I think Warlock has a kind of a bit of an association, I think, with Strixhaven, and like, yeah. Again, there was something like, oh, like, well, Warlocks, do they really need to be there? But yeah, I mean, it seemed like the best spellcaster kind of choice.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the set, right, it's, I don't know, like, mean, a lot of the batching is more for, right, constructed, I guess, or whatever, and being backwards compatible. And you can, like, make a deck full of all these disparate creatures and see what fun you can have there. I mean, in limited, it was pretty cool just in terms of, right, like, it's something to care about. You don't have to care about a ton of different things. Like, and on a lot of the sets I've worked on, I've kind of had, like, one main typal thing to care about. Like, even mentioned Dominaria again, right? It was kind of Wizards was the thing you care about. You didn't have to care about a lot of stuff. Like, in many ways, this gets more complicated because you're like, you need to internalize what these five types are and memorize them at some point. But, like, it's still only kind of one thing you need to care about. Like, it's like, oh, it's an outlaw or it's not. And that's sort of a fun thing. Like, oh, yeah, like, you're definitely going to get into draft situations where it's like, oh, I really want to take an outlaw because I have, like, there's a card that effectively has affinity for outlaws. And there are a bunch of, like, higher rarity cards that are, like, yeah, really reward you heavily for outlaws.
Well, we're speaking outlaws. One real quick thing. We added a new token in this set called the Mercenary Token, which is a 1/1 that taps to do +1/+0 as a sorcery. And can they block? I'm not sure.
They can block, yeah.
Okay. I think one point is not blocking, but...
yeah, I think, let me pull it up. I think a lot of this I think this actually was my idea in terms of, like, the exact mechanical implementation. It comes actually from Traveling Minister in... what set is it? It's from Crimson Vow. I don't know. I really enjoyed Traveling Minister in Crimson Vow. It did the same thing, except that that card gave you life, which wasn't a good match for... Or kind of a minion lackey, whatever, hench person.
Yeah, we wanted minions. That's where they came from.
Right. Like, yeah. A lot of this is, right, like, the, right, kind of the lower level person that's maybe kind of disposable to your plans, but that's helping you out and can further your plans and help you along. So, yeah, I felt like that card I had enjoyed. That card felt like a really good match for the vibe we were going for these tokens. They help progress the game, right? Like, right. In general, it's just a pretty good, like, I don't have any good attacks. We kind of just sit here, like, having cards that help progress the game or just in general pretty good fun games. So it felt like a nice, simple yet effective token. Certainly we, right, it is, again, in terms of making sure you know that we've heard certain things, like, yeah, we've had some, like, concerns about some of our formats being faster or play draw dependent. Right, there's some danger in the, like, much of the power of this token is in being able to attack, and it's can come out potentially quickish on some of the cards. But yeah, like, certainly we were all taking that into consideration, and, like, we did dial back on these somewhat, although they're some of that was dialing back on the rates that we gave you at and moving them up in the curve more than, like, there's still, like, a lot of cards that make these, and they're very, very fun tokens.
Okay, so two last things to talk about. Now we get into the Western-flavored stuff. All that was sort of the villain stuff. The villain theme was much larger structurally, mechanically. But we did do two things that tied into Western. So one was something we'd been talking about doing forever, and just it seemed like the set to do it, which is mount / saddle. Now this is, this was the mechanic that went through the most changes. Like, this, what ended up in the set is not what we handed off. And the tricky thing about this is it involves a future set that we haven't talked about, but, what I can say is there's a future set that was playing in a similar space, and then eventually realized that we should just make them the same rather than have them work differently. The one we handed off, me just saying this will tell the problem of it. We were playing in mutate space, where you put your rider on top of the mount that you were riding, and then you got the abilities of the creature you were on top of, basically, the way it worked, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Yeah, this went through a ton of iteration. Again, my team worked on this a ton. The team you were alluding to was also working on it. I feel like, in terms of the main reasons where we ended up where we did, is we wanted it to work a lot like vehicles, conceptually, like, that made sense. Like, it also helped, I think, players could appreciate how these cards worked and sort of what the expectations were there, right? That, like, in some ways, these are, like, vehicles that are creatures to begin with, so, right? Like, it's they don't even have some of the, like, high ceiling, low floor problems of vehicles where... Your worst case scenario is you have, like, probably a vanilla creature until you get another creature, whereas vehicles can sit around and potentially do nothing and be frustrating, and then because of that we have to make them more powerful once they're going. So I don't know, it felt like people would be able to kind of learn it easily, that it would play like those, that we could have similar, right? Like we can make, there's not a ton of these, but they're like, whenever this creature becomes tapped, you get a bonus. And then that's meant to be like in the role of being a writer, or like, you know, in previous sets, like a pilot or whatever, where we could still make similar types of cards that would work well with both vehicles and mounts. Yeah, I think it's fine just to have something that's like a pretty close analog to something. You know, vehicles have been largely well received, doing kind of a slight spin on that for mounts felt appropriate. The other main change we made that people may not understand is we said that you can only saddle as a sorcery. It's tricky to go into all the details there. The main, like, you're like, I thought you said you wanted this to be like crew, and that's not like crew. Like the main thing is, like, pretty much at least within this set, almost all the rewards come from like you attacking after you've saddled. There aren't a lot of reasons to be saddling on your opponent's turn. And a lot of the templates just ended up being a lot simpler once we switched to that. Like we didn't have to sit like it, or it's a combination of templates and the gameplay we wanted, right? Like if we had a card, like whenever this mount deals combat damage to a player, do something cool if it was saddled. And then your like opponent would be like, well, you'll just, if I don't block it, then you'll saddle it after I block. It's like, that's not fun. That's not flavorful, right? It's like you wait to see if I block. And then, so I don't know. To some extent, the audience has to trust me that, yeah, it cleaned up a lot of the templates and a lot of the gameplay to make it sorcery speed only. And digital will be so much smoother because of the, like, they're just, right, vehicles hold priority all the time. And, like, you don't have to worry about that on if you're a big arena fan or whatnot.
Okay, the one last item, and then we'll wrap up here. The desert subtype. Westerns often take place kind of in the desert, so we felt like it was apropos. And I think in my vision design podcast, I talk a little bit about the lessons of Return to Ravnica, where we learn kind of the power of gates and how you can make like sub-themes out of land subtype. So talk a little bit about how deserts got used.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, again, pretty early on we had those, like, little, the crime deserts, which just felt like fun. A lot of people associate me very heavily with, like, practically forcing in the, like, ETB tapped game lands into all of our limited environments. Like, so I don't know. It was, you know, fun to do a little bit of a twist here. I mean, you've already hit on the creative reasons to do it. We had enough going on in the set that this isn't, like, a major theme in the set. It's something that I wanted to be there, and there are some variety of rewards from common to, at least I forget if we have mythics, but across most rarities, there are cards that care about deserts. It's a fun little thing you can have in some of the decks. It's not like a color pair theme or anything like that. But yeah, we know that there are deserts fans out there. We wanted to give those decks more deserts. There are a lot more deserts, and then like there are some rewards for deserts. And some fun cards and some cards that I think have constructed shots certainly for having deserts in a variety of formats. But yeah, it just felt like a fun thing here. Like I've compared it to Kaldheim, right? Where Kaldheim, we were very loud and it was a major part of the set that we did Snowlands. And this just felt like, all right, well, yeah, we got to do deserts here. Deserts are just a creative like slam dunk for the land slot.
Okay. So that is all the mechanics. So we are wrapping up here. Any other just general thoughts on the making of Outlaws of Thunder Junction?
We've covered a lot. Yeah, again, the set's really fun. We haven't called out a lot of other people. I think there are just a lot of fun names and words, like, I know, like, holy cow, and just things like that we had to make sure we'd gone through our paces on, like, with our creative consultants and stuff in that example. But just there are a lot of other fun names that I really enjoyed, and I think a lot of that, like Annie Sardellis, was like the vision second.
Yeah, she's my strong second. Yeah.
And she, I think she put in a ton of those, and I just like kind of tried my best to make sure that, like, no, really, we should do like claim jumper is another one of my favorites, where it's like, yeah, a rabbit that's a claim jumper. Get it? Like she has had a lot of just kind of clever puns and stuff that I really enjoyed, and allusions to other other things, yeah. So, yeah, it is, I hope, right, like, I feel like a lot of our job, too, is, you know, getting people to, right, it is fun to say some of the words on the cards and say some of the names and, like, right, you know, whether, like, just lots of examples. Yeah.
I thought of one thing I forgot, so one last thing. We didn't talk at all. So one of the ideas of the set was, I called it, like, a showcase set where... the Omen Pass allowed us to pull things from around the multiverse to sort of take a theme, which was villains, obviously, and show it off. To talk a little bit, the Vision design, like, knew there were going to be a lot of named villains, but we didn't, that wasn't something we really worried about. That was really a set, you working with creative in set design. What was it like getting all the different villains in the set?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, yeah, there's always a trade-off. I feel like every time I'm working on these sets, reminds me a little bit of March of the Machine 2, but yeah, like, right, like creative has like stories they want to tell. Like I have characters like, oh, this character seems really more popular with our fans than the character you want to do. But yeah, like again, creative's mostly driving the show there. I did have some fun backs and forths with like, again, Grace Fong was the lead through much of that process that you're talking about. Like Miguel Lopez eventually took over when Grace left us, sadly. But yeah, it was fun. Like, a lot of it was like trying to figure out like how big was the core of like Oko's crew for doing this heist and playing into heist tropes. And right, like that a lot of like, at least there was a core gang and those all have like the special like wanted poster frame treatments. And but then there were sort of associated characters that they like might run into with like Malcolm and Breeches or Geese and Grolf and other people. And just like, right, what role would they be in, like, if you were watching a heist movie, what is their role and what is their name? And, like, that's why, like, you know, it's, like, Rakdos, the muscle, and, like, you know, the, like, the veteran, and, like, I think the kid didn't stick, but there was, like, the demolitionist, the, right, like, who are all the special, like, kind of the charmer, like, Ariadne's the charmer, like, you know, that, right, those, the heist genre has all of those characters of, like, you know, you kind of have, like, your ideal almost, like, role-playing group of, like, everyone has a specialized function, and it was fun to pull those together. And then beyond that, there are just a lot of people that, yeah, weren't tied to the heist that, right, that I think we thought would be fun. Like, who would it be fun to see here? Like, now I'm spacing on his name, but, like, the guy with the oxen or whatever, and, like, you know, even Flibblethip, right? Like, who would just kind of be fun to show here? Not that Flibblethip's hopefully a villain here. I don't even know. But
he's not a villain, I don't believe.
So. One other thing we didn't touch on is Big Score. I don't know if you wanted to get to that.
We can talk that. Sure. Let's talk Big Score before we wrap up for the day. So the behind the scenes is originally we were going to do the equivalent to what Aftermath was for March of the Machine. Epilogue. We called them epilogues, I think. And then the audience wasn't very fond of Aftermath. So we said, oh, let's not put it there. So talk a little bit about what became of the Big Score.
Yeah, so I mean, I will give credit here to like, so Adam Prozac did a lot of the like what effectively I would I guess call like vision design. Like he had a team. I was sitting in on the team, but like he was running that. Like again, part of it is I think at that point we'd sort of seen the response to Epilogue. I'm like, well, I had like worked a lot on leading that design. Maybe like let's run this a little different. Let's have somebody else lead the Epilogue. And Adam was tagged to lead the vision for Big Score and try the process in a different way. And then, yeah, ultimately we ended up, as the story has been told elsewhere, but we ended up like just folding that into the set, cut some of the cards, but like we took like the best cards, our favorite cards from that, and wrapped it into a 30 card set. And those get dropped in what the list slot, in packs. And yeah, it's
and those were cool items it's in the vault, right? That's the flavor.
Yeah, right. So yeah, it's cool. Yeah, like these are right. So there's like this ancient civilization of like Famari had like hidden this vault, which was like kind of the whole point of like what the heist was. And so yeah, this was the payoff, right? This was supposed to be right the like again post credits scene of like perhaps like now we've opened the vault and what's behind the vaults and what's in the vault and what, you know, what was cool about the vault. And so there are a lot of like a lot of the cards like have reference other powerful artifacts from the past, some more subtle than others, but like, right, the, like The idea is we wanted a lot of them to be artifacts, just like powerful inventions from this civilization, and that do powerful things, and maybe look like, oh, maybe some of these other things you've encountered in magic also somehow had drawn upon some similar inspiration. And then, yeah, they're just like creatures and all sorts of stuff, and like Loot. I hope he's called Loot, the character. And yeah, so it was fun. It was it's very different. I mean, again, we had time to test it as part of the limited environment, although it wasn't there from the start, certainly, as you could understand from how it rolled out. But yeah, it's fun. It adds another layer of like goofy things that can come up in drafts. And it's like also, yeah, got a lot of differently themed stuff for Constructed, right? Like there definitely are themes there, especially like along the lines of artifacts and some other things where we were playing up that are different themes from the main set that all will have like appeal to different groups of players and different decks.
Well, I want to say, Dave, I'm at my desk here. So thank you so much for this look at all the set design of the set. I'm super happy how it came out. You and I have a lot of sets we've worked on together, so this was yet another in our long line of sets. So it was always fun to work with you.
Yeah, I'm very excited to. Right, we like again. I like stuff like plot and spree. You're like, yeah, I think like very surprisingly deep mechanics that I'm excited to see what our players do with. And like, yeah, I think like the frontier western genre. Like, yeah, I'm also excited to see like, yeah, like what people think of what we've done here. And yeah, like it's, yeah, like, I mean, as someone who grew up in like San Diego and is sort of from vaguely the Southwest and stuff, some of even just kind of some of the flora and fauna like are, you know, kind of fun for me, right? Like I've grown up in an irrigated desert, so.
So anyway, thanks again, Dave. And since yep. I'm at my desk, we all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So thanks, everybody, for being with us today, and I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.